And before we begin, let us invoke the blessings of God upon our meeting. O Lord, our God, you knew our sitting down and our rising up. You knew us before we was placed in the womb. You knew us when we was there. You know our thoughts and you know our lives. We ask you tonight, O Lord, that you would continue to grant us your Holy Spirit, so that your Son, Jesus Christ, might continue to give to us the faith, the love, and the hope that he brought to this world when he came. And when he said particularly, I am come that you might have life, and you might have it more abundantly, we ask you, O Lord, to continue to give us that life, the abundant life, to put into practice those things that our faith requires of us. We ask you to continue to bless us now for Christ's sake. Amen. Okay. I want to thank you, first of all, for coming tonight. I would like to introduce myself. I'm Pastor Kermit Radcliffe. I'm the pastor of Unity Lutheran Church in East St. Louis. I am a 1966 graduate of Springfield, Illinois, now Springfield, Fort Wayne. And my first parish was down in Birmingham, Alabama. My home is Selma. And my second parish was in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and my third parish was here in East St. Louis. So I think that's, and I'm married, and I have a son who's 8 and a daughter who is 3. And I believe that's enough for the introduction, since nobody else will have a chance to introduce themselves. Let us begin then tonight. I would like to begin by reading a few little excerpts that I have taken or put down for our discussion tonight. And these questions that we have now, I want you to look particularly on the introduction at question number 1. The question always before the blacks was, what must I do to be free? Now that was the question. That still is the question. And I want to read a few things that we have put down here tonight. You know, it was Emerson who said, this time, like all time, is a very good one, if we but know what to do with it. This is a time of great opportunity for every soldier of the cross. It is equally a day of great responsibility, great tribulation. As our country begins the third century of existence, still one nation under God, and our church, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, begins its 130th year, still under the grace of God, we can, through the power of the Holy Spirit, active in the means of grace, do a work for Christ in the heart of all of his people that will be more telling than anything that has been done in our religious or our political history. And I can strongly say that tonight, particularly I picked up a little hymn verse that I would like to read for you. And that little hymn verse goes something like this. I can be strong, or I can be brave. I can be free, or I can be a slave. I can forgive as Christ forgave. The choice is mine. I can go through the storm, or I can go through the gale. Through the gale. I can be true or I can fail. I can desert or set my sail. The choice is mine. But you know there is always the danger that we may fail to see or to seize the God-given opportunities that God has given to us. One of the things that causes us to fail in our life is fear. Many of us have all kinds of fear. We call them phobias, and I suppose there are all kinds of phobias that we have. Some of us have the fear of darkness. Others of us have the fear of criticism. Some of us have fear of other people. Some of us have fear of heights, of water, of animals, that kind of thing. But you know, it was Abraham Lincoln who once said, if I were to try to read, much less answer all of the attacks made upon me, this shop might well be closed for any other business.
I do the best I can, and we would say with the aid and the help of God, the very best that I can. And I mean to keep on doing it until the end. And if the end bring me out wrong, then 10 angels swearing that I was right would make no difference. And as we look at that question again, the question always before blacks was, what must I do to be free? The United States began with the struggle for civil rights. The specific issue at that time was taxation without representation. It was merely a focus on a larger question, whether or not a dominant majority could continue to exploit a subject minority. The American colony decided that they were fed up and tired of the oppression that had become intolerable for them. So they began a protest. The first protest they started was by petition. The next they had a demonstration. And when these two free soldiers are fugitive, then they had an armed revolt. America was born as a revolutionary nation. This is the American heritage, the struggle for freedom, the striving to build a land with liberty and justice for, and as we say for, that sentence must remain incomplete. Freedom, liberty, equality, and justice are truly a part of our democratic inheritance. But this is an inheritance which we, as a people, had never fully claimed. For it is again tied up and bound together with another. And that another is the legacy of slavery, which is also a part of the American tradition. And we have been unable to separate these two all the way down to, from 1619 all the way to the present time. That tradition of freedom and slavery. And as we try to look at slavery, it remains today unconquered and is almost a devil as it battles its way through the freedom of the mind and also the streets in America. That battle is America's record and is also America's fate. You know, as you look at that, it was 20 years ago now today, in 1965, when a new chapter in this record opened, and with that it started to respond to the condition of the black minority. It began with a new kind of confrontation, a new style of leadership. But you know, that leadership has been misunderstood for a long time. But as we look at that now, let's go to the answer that you have. The answer almost always was, get a job, get a salary, financial security was the thing that was told to blacks more than any other thing that was told them. So a financial base from which to operate in a materialistic society. But before we can go and look at that question adequately, I would like for those of you who have your Bible to turn to Genesis 9, 25 through 27. Okay? The Bible says there, cursed be Canaan, a slave of slaves, that he beat his brother, and blessed be the Lord, the God of Shem, and let Canaan be a slave, God enlarge Jethro, and let him dwell in the tent of Shem, and let Canaan be his slave. For a long time in America, those verses were used to justify slavery. Those verses were used to talk about blacks and other, particularly blacks or Negroes, in this country more than anything else. The curse of Canaan, frequently erroneously referred to the curse of Ham,
was used in the past to justify slavery, is being used by some people even today to defend the status quo in race relations. They interpret the curse to mean that the Negro, as a descendant of Ham, is destined by God to fulfill a permanent subservient place in society, that he should never be considered as equal by the white society. On the basis of the curse now, some even contend that the Negro is innately inferior and that he can never lift himself or be lifted to the intellectual, cultural, or even the moral level of other races. As we said, the slave ship came in 1619, the first slave came to America, and this is now 1976. And as we talk about the change of slavery tonight, I would like to spell out to you what slavery is and what it means. The question was not, what must I do to be saved, but what must I do to be free? And many times we ask ourselves, why were people so concerned about being free? What was it that caused this kind of thing? Here is the change of slavery. The change of slavery says something like this. You can't enter here. You can't move here. You can't work here. You can't eat here. You can't drink here. You can't ride here. You can't study here. You can't sell here. You can't sit. You can't sleep. You can't come. You can't vote. Finally, you cannot worship here. Those were the kind of things that were linked with slavery. And they also say you can't join the country club. That's still 1976. You couldn't attend movie theaters. And now, in our day, our churches throughout the country and many institutions are saying to black people, you can't preach or you can't teach here. You can't speak out because that will upset a lot of things. You know, the unions, they limit their membership to only their kind. You can't be truthful because if you speak the truth, then you may lose your life. That kind of thing. Now, that is the issue of slavery. Whenever we say that you can't do something that God has endowed a person with the right to do. As I was reading the little statement, I said, the striving to build a land with liberty and justice for, and then we had to leave the all off, because there was a time when all of those phrases were true. That as a minority, and as those who were victimized by slavery, we could not move and live in our day. And in 1976, now the thing that is coming back again to bring us back into the past or to turn back the hand of time is those little initials there. And I'm sure you've seen the headlines in all of the papers. So that's what it meant when the blacks would say, what must I do to be free? And as we go along, we will show you where not only was the church, the state, the country, but also the congregation that was teaching at the time, was teaching from the Bible, and was misteaching the teachings that Jesus had taught the church to teach. So then, as we look at freedom now, as you come to freedom, freedom was conceived of in commercial terms. So everything that has to do with freedom for the black was seen only in terms of commercial things. If we could move, we would have to have money, good salaries, good jobs. In order to work, you need to have the kind of education that would qualify you or skill you for those particular kinds of jobs. Favor that kind of thing that you saw freedom in terms of commercial. And you notice that there is one other thing that we could put up on the board. Slavery itself was the other commercial term. We had to go to war in order to determine whether that commercial thing was seen or would live in our country the rest of our days. The next thing now, what caused the black condition that we had at the time and what caused it even today? We have the word poverty down. What caused poverty? If you can't work, then and you don't get any money, you will live in slavery. There are many Bible verses that I have put down for us tonight for us to look at. As we go through, I'm happy that some of you brought your Bibles so that we could look at some of the Bible verses together concerning the terms of freedom and of slavery. If you will turn to Proverbs, let's go to that little Old Testament text for a while. Proverbs chapter 1 verse 5. Okay, you see what that verse says? A wise man will hear an increase in learning, and a man of understanding will acquire good counsel. Now, if you look at verse at chapter 22, verse 7, that will say something about slavery and about slaves. And while you're looking that up, I'll just write down all the rest of these five verses I have there. Okay. Now, the next one was Proverbs 22:7, where it says, the rich rules over the poor, and the borrower becomes the lender's slave. The next one we have is Deuteronomy 8:18. Still, freedom is looked on in terms of commercial terms, where God, speaking to Moses, said, but you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who has given you power to make wealth, that he may confirm his covenant which he swore to your fathers, as it is this day. And then Jesus in Luke 6:35 talks about, but love your enemies, do good, and lend, expecting nothing in return. So we say that as we look at those verses now, and as we look at the conditions of the situation of life and the economics of life, we say that one of the reasons why so many people would leave home was because of the economic condition under which they was living. The increase in debt that was over their head, the landlord sending letters, and that there was also desertion and cruelty. You know the Daniel Webster who said, whatever makes a good Christian makes a good citizen. And in Nehemiah he talked about the people had a mind to work. If anyone will not work, neither let him eat. That's St. Paul in 2 Thessalonians 3:10. Now, there are some verses now that I would like to go to as we look at the condition of blacks in the freedom part. If you look now at part 3, it talks about It was not economic forces which moved blacks. They sought dignity, not dollars and power. They sought manhood, womanhood, or personhood, and not money or power again. They sought pride and not prosperity. What do we mean when we talk in terms of that it was not an economic force behind the freedom that blacks was looking for? When we talk about it was not economic, it was not the things that a person could get with his hands that he could buy that the blacks was looking for in their life. It was the things that the country or the condition under which they lived could not offer them. They were looking for something that goes beyond and goes further into their life than the things that a dollar could buy. You know, we are told that a dollar buys everything that we do. And I suppose that is true, that money buys everything that we do, but it buys nothing of what we are. If we wanted to send men to the seminary to become pastors, we need money. If we're going to run a seminary, an institution for that, everything we do in life costs money. But what we are in life has nothing to do with what we do. Now, if I would ask you tonight, what is the third use of the law? What answer would you give me? You know, we talk about the first, the second, and the third use of the law. We say this was not the economic thing. What is the third use of the law? Do you have any idea? We say the first use of the law is what? A mirror. And what does a mirror do? It reflects. No one else but us. If we had a mirror up looking at it, we would see only ourselves. Okay, what is the second use of the law? Just before that. Okay. Curb. What does a curb usually do? Yeah, it's just like this. It keeps, we say, sin from breaking out in the world. But it keeps us from going off a track. If we were driving down the highway and there was no curb there, we might go off of the highway. But with the curb there, it keeps us in bounds with what the things that we are. Now, the third use of the law, as you said, rule. But what does that mean? You know, there are two little words we use in all of the commandments. What does this mean? We should there's the third use of the law. But in any instance, blacks was only taught this part.
And as I look for one of the little quotes now, we will be able now to look at how the Bible was used in the earlier days in talking about the fear, love, and trust. The implication of the freedom of the Christian man based on the New Testament and the theology of the Protestant Reformation had no difficulty being recalled by the churches during the War of Independence, 1776. It was, however, vastly avoided by most of the missionaries in their instruction to Negroes, having convinced the slave owners that the conversion of his human property would not result in a capital loss, but greatly increase his profits. The missionary reduced the Christian theology and Christian ethics to the most simplistic and inoffensive affirmation. The favorite text was the passage from Ephesians 6:5, where it says, "Servant,
And in the King James English, it says, slaves, be obedient to your masters, or to them which are your masters, according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, in singleness in your heart, as unto Christ. By the middle of the 19th century now, several catechisms were available for oral instruction, such as the Charles C. Jones Catechism for the Presbyterian Slave. And here is how the catechism would outline the tenets of the orthodoxy of the church, suitable for the injunction of blacks and for slaves at that time. One of the documents would say, would inquire of the slave, what did God make you for? And the answer to that question was to make a crop. Economics again. This is teaching from the Bible, and we had it in the catechism. What is the meaning of thou shalt not commit adultery? The answer again, to serve our Heavenly Father and our earthly master, to obey our overseers, and not to steal anything. That was in the catechism. That was during the 17th century, as we were coming closer to the time when the slave question was a big question among people in the country. So those are just some of the little excerpts that we could use, but we want to show you the situation as it existed at the time when we were slaves, coming up to the time when we are where we are today. So that is the condition. Now, that was the cause of the condition, that the blacks in this country was not looked upon as people, but as property. And that you have to remember if you're ever talking to someone in the country, out of the country, that no one has ever read their history about what the church is doing and what the church can do. You have to be aware of the situation that has gone before what we're trying to accomplish in our day today. Now, in most of our black American communities today, the words that you will hear, words like liberation, self-determination, healthy identity, and justice for black people, are the main issues on the agendas that we have in our country today. Many are saying that we have to improve, which is a true statement, all of the conditions that exist wrong in the country toward blacks. Now, it was Dr. Martin Luther King, as we come to the movement, who changed this idea of the economics and placed it over into a spiritual realm. He said we have to confront the consciousness of this nature, this nation. And as we confront the conscience of this nation, the nation ought to be able to see the first, the second, the third use of the law. And as they would see that and become convicted, then the love of Christ would begin to reign in the heart of people. He called that the militant, nonviolent approach, where that visibly people could see what was going on in the life of people. They could see the poverty, the fear, the degradation, the lack of education, all of the things that was going on in the life of people. With the exposure of television, people could see that, and then that became the mirror. With the lawlessness that was permitted upon the people at the time, for doing those kinds of things. Like in our day, 1955, a person had to move to the back or to drink out of a different water fountain. The curb to hold in check that which had gotten out of bounds, the liberty and the justice for all. And there should be established within our lifetime a rule that would bring about the preamble to the Constitution of the United States, that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that God has endowed, that we are all endowed by our Creator going back to Genesis 1, for all of the inalienable rights, and with those rights was the life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And it is very difficult to have those three things when all you hear is the word can't, can't, can't. If you look in a mirror and a person say you can't see yourself, I suppose one of the things that really brought this home for most blacks during the 50s was one time a teacher asked a little black girl to draw a picture of herself. And as she drew herself with long straight hair and painted the hair blonde and her little eyes blue. And then they knew that deep down in the consciousness of our own existence, there was something wrong. Someone had been looking in a different mirror and they weren't able to see the self. This then, as the movement began to uncover and unfold all of the struggles that blacks had been over the years, all of the injustice had then begun to come out, and everybody could see those injustices together. We saw during the period of those injustices that a president was assassinated and killed. His brother was killed, and then finally Dr. King. Then there came the movement of the black militant, the student violent movement. We saw all of that going through the 60s, the burning, the breaking down, again of the curb, the reflecting of seeing the condition that people was in, the rat and the roach infected areas that nothing could be or would be done about. All of that took place. And we ask ourselves now, as that condition existed, what was it that God was saying to us when we as a people refused and were still refusing to accept the humanity of other people? I suppose one of the things that was happening at the time, things was moving too fast for many people in this country. You know, as I grew up down Selma. I used to go out in the little places much thicker than this. It would be something like this out in the woods, and I would always see big snakes. And you know, somehow I became afraid of snakes because people would tell me that snakes were so poison and they would kill you if they bite you. You know, I could never distinguish a poison snake from one that was not. If I would see a little green garden snake, that would invoke fear in me. The only thing I would think of doing is killing snake. Now, that's what happened when fear, and only fear, is injected in a people toward a people. When only fear is injected, everything we know to do is to fear. And that's the kind of thing that happened to us ever since the day of slavery. The fear has been instilled in us. And as the movement toward the fulfillment of the third use of the law began to see itself and began to feel itself in us, it is only after, as the Lutherans, I suppose, has the best theology that anyone has ever thought of. Because it is only when we can see, and when we can look at the law for what it is, can the gospel ever begin to say anything to us. This is why, in touching the conscience of a nation that was a Christian nation, the movement felt that this could be eliminated. And many of the verses that was read during the time of the struggles and during the time of the civil rights movement was that we shall beat our swords into plowshares, our spears into pruning hooks, and we would not study war anymore. Directly from the Old Testament, trying to eradicate fear, that the lion and the lamb would lay down together and none would make them afraid. That is the only thing that fear make us afraid.
Fear stops us from accomplishing the things that we want to accomplish in our life for the Lord. It is almost impossible for us, as we love the Lord and love to do what He wants us to do. If we have fear in our heart, it is difficult for us to go out and make an evangelism call. It is difficult for us to go out and visit people in their home from the congregation. If this prevails in our life. Now, I suppose that we can never get rid of all of the fear that comes to us. The natural fear is good fear. But the fear that makes us reside and begin to say the kinds of things that the country was saying, that's what fear will do. And when fear began to do that, then there is no conscience for anything but what we have put in the box. And that little thing that's in the box then become good. Most of us, as we have lived our lives, have lived our life kind of the way that we look at most things in life. Our life is shaped by the things that we do in our earlier days, by the way that we live in our earlier life. Now, these first two, this night, now next week, we will get into some of the real issues, some of the key issues. We'll start talking about how we apply the Bible rightly to the situations that we have. But before we do that, tonight we want to walk through, as it were, some of the things that has caused the kind of disruption that has taken place in our country. Now, you know, during the 60s, that became a slogan, and it was a slogan out of fear again. And out of that time, we've had some beautiful theology come forth. Black theology, the black liberation struggles. Everything then becomes black and white. One of the situations that we have that came from the Warren Commission report is that we are headed for two societies, one black and one white. But this time it will not be separate but equal. So they are separate but unequal. And that is the thing that made everyone afraid during the 60s when that report came out. Because, as you know, when you have anything separate and they are unequal, that one, if you're trying to have a balance and one side of the balance is unequal to the other ones, one is going to go down, the other one's going to go up. And so that is the thing that happened from the time that the Warren Commission brought its report, even till today, that America is wondering how and what we can do to bring together again that society that was so close to the ideal and that was so close to the real. You know, it was during the 60s that we start talking about, as President Kennedy did, the new frontier. And then it was under the Johnson administration they started talking about the Great Society. And all of that crumbled because as we looked at these things here, we left the third one completely obscure. And no one could see or read anything that was happening. Now, there were some other struggles that was going on in our country. There was dialogue between Lutherans and Catholics, between other Protestants groups. There was a closeness, the coming together. Maybe that was just not the time when God had planned for the things to take place that should have taken place in the country.
Now, what was it that caused America to refuse to accept the humanity of its black minority? You must always remember that during slavery and during the time after slavery, after the Civil War, the Reconstruction, there was a time after that that black was not considered as human beings. We were thought of as something less than a human being. I think we were at one time considered 1/7 of a human. And then there was no rights granted to us. And as a result of that, you began to look at your history and began to read some of the stuff. The Negro in 20th Century America is one of the books that highlights a lot of the struggles that went on in the country and still going on in the country. But that was one of the things that caused the kinds of things that we have, where there was no acceptance of the black humanity of blacks. And the thing that really, I suppose, more than anything else that caused this is the next little phrase, the next little part of our outline there, was racism. Now, you know, racism is almost like a faith. It is something that people hold as a belief for a long time. There is a belief that, as we read before, that one group is superior to the other. And that was one of the things that started, and as that started, then rationalism began to develop. Everyone began to rationalize things and say, why? Why shouldn't it be this way? Then this is when the Bible had begun to become the book to use to justify all of the things that was happening in the communities as we lived and saw in the past. One of the other little quotes that I would like to read is that in this time, in the same sense, many black people living are raising very searching questions now today about the Bible. And that's a serious question that they have begun to ask. They want to know if it affirms and supports black liberation. They want to know, and they are wondering if the Bible is not just another tool in the hands of American society. And this is really real. People are really beginning to question everything. And the people who are expressing these suspicions and hostilities are not limited to your rank and file of poor and uneducated people. No, these are the people who are expressing these concerns are people who are highly trained, economically well off. They are just as loud and just as passionate in expressing their feeling that the Bible works against blacks rather than working for them. Now, to try to get, and even the attitude of the Muslims, those converts, and many college students are beginning to sense the same thing in their life and in their time. And one of the reasons is because of the way the Bible has been interpreted. You know, one of the most, I suppose, devastating things that could happen to a person is for you to want to go to church and to be met at the door by the elders of the congregation and say, you are not welcome in this church. You have to go to another church. And that has happened in many instances in our country. And that's one of the other situations that we, as people today living, have to try to erase the kinds of things that has happened to us in the past. And many times people say, well, I just don't understand what is going on with the people. These are some of the things that are going on with people. People are beginning to believe now that if you live a good life, that's all that is required. If you love your fellow man without even ever trying to touch the gospel,
is just to live on that side of the law and then leave it there. Now, tonight we want to go on down, and we want to, in the next few minutes, try to look at some of the justification for the injustices that were placed upon blacks in this country and also in the church. Now, one of the reasons for the justification, we said, that was racism. And racism, like a faith, where you have one race superior, a feeling that they are superior to the other, is what caused the justification for that kind of thing. And since blacks in this country have been servants, in the servant role throughout the history of the United States, and the country works like the military. You know, in the military, they still have the military where you have officers and enlisted people, person. They used to call them enlisted men, but they call them enlisted people now. And that's still separate. And there used to be a separation of that in the military. There was a place for the black officer and the black enlisted. That was still another kind of thing. And in 1948 was when President Truman said that we would treat everyone as equal, treat everyone equal in the military service. So it was in 1948 that the military went back to and just have now two groups, officers and enlisted people. And I suppose out of that kind of setting in the country, that as it had developed its history over the time, was able to develop something like that in its justification. Things have always been that way. Why not keep them that way? Now, one of the other situations that we find ourselves in today that is not a part of our course, but we can touch upon it, is women preaching in the church. I know we've used a lot of Bible verses to justify that. This is how the justification of injustices was placed upon blacks. It's the justification of a person's place. If a person know where his place is, see, in the past, the women's role was in the kitchen and the rearing of kids. Now that those roles are changing, and as many women almost working now as men and holding high position and that kind of thing, things are changing. And the thing to do is like when God created or began to create things. You know, people was in the garden for a little while, but then things changed when they sinned. They had to find a new kind of place for themselves. And constantly, ever since that time, things been changing all around us. They never stay still. And during that first little interval when God placed two people together, and they came about with that little third use of the law, love, you know, that always produces something. That, if you want a definition of love, love always produces something. When two people come together in love and marriage, that produces some offspring. And this is what happened when God sent Christ. That love produced something. And this is what we look at when we look at Christian people. What the love of God in Christ is producing with them in that place where they are in their life. Luther would call that our station in life. And then the next one was spurious. Anthropology was created. Now, we get to look at the kinds of anthropology. We all know what the word anthropology is. It's just the teaching of the doctrine of man, of people, that a person is less than human. Blacks was considered property, as we said before, in this country. His place was in his master's keeping, because it was a slave kind of mentality. If you start thinking one way for long enough,
you will always live with that kind of thinking. So as the thinking of people was on the place was slaves, and as we know the story of Abraham with Isaac and Ishmael, there was a place there for them together at one time until things start happening, and then his place was no longer in the house, it was outside. That kind of thing we have when we look at the kind of anthropology that is created among the justification of one race being superior to the other. The next thing we had is that the kinds of theology that we read before was contrived and conceived in the mind and also written down in books, where that one place was never the same as the other. And that place then in the creation of the mind of people. You know, I suppose that as you look at the way things have happened to people over the years, that for someone to talk about creation, it would be difficult to believe that all of this happened by creation. Now, you could more readily believe the evolutionary theory when it comes to race relations than you can creation, even in the church. Our faith requires that we reflect the image of God that we've been created in. But instead of reflecting that image of God, we've been reflecting what the evolutionaries would call the evolutionary theories of life. The evolution say that at one time you are not good enough. You are at this point of progression, and you keep progressing until at the time when you reach or you arrive at that particular place in life. Now, if you look at the history from 1619 to 1976, you will see that it's been more of an evolutionary process than a creation process, where when you can't live here, you can't move here, the time will come when you can do this, is more on the theory of evolution. That is why it's so difficult now for black pastors to really reach the communities in which they live, because of the way we have practiced our faith. And people see that as evolution rather than creation. It is really, and if anyone is looking at it, how the evolutionary theories work, you will see that at one time, being from slave to, and this you cannot say free yet. You recall when Dr. King made his last little statement at Memphis, he said, "I believe, I've had a dream that one day, you know, we all would be able to live out the dream, the reality." And he said at that time he was not fearing any man, anything. His eyes had seen the promise of the Lord coming. He said, "I may not get there with you to this place we call free, but I believe that we as a people will be free." Now that's closer to the evolutionary process of still not being fully arrived at that point in history where we can say, "I am," and then go on from there and claim with other people. Now in July 77, at the Dallas Convention, we will celebrate the Black Centennial, the 100 years of Lutheran work from 1877 to 1977. And instead of talking about the injustices that has happened, we'll be talking more about the freedom that God has placed in all of us and the thing that God requires of us to do in the future. And it will not be a looking back. Rather, it will be looking forward to that kind of reality that takes place. Now, the fifth thing that happened was that history. History itself was rewritten. And in the history, there was nothing that blacks had done that was worthy of placing in the historical setting of America. When we went through school, there was nothing much taught about the Negro and his accomplishments in our history. The rewriting of history was only talking about what the society itself had done and the majority that was in the society at the time. The only thing that we would get more or less was Uncle Tom Cabinet kind of reading, and I'm supposed that many of you read those little articles. But that was the kind of thing that happened. History itself was rewritten by the people that was now justifying why one race should receive better treatment than the other. The sixth thing now, we call those the blue laws. The laws was made to fit the custom. At one time in this country, it was a custom after the Reconstruction to lynch or to hang blacks for almost anything. They'd go out and find a tree and would hang the guy on weekends and nights and that kind of thing. That was what was happening. The laws then was set up so that if anything would happen between a black and a white, the black would always get hung and the white would go free. So then it just became a custom, and the laws then on the books was remade to fit those customs because there were those kind of people that was living to do that kind of thing. And now that took place during the time after the Civil War and after the period of Reconstruction. So the seventh thing that happened under the racism issue there is that these constructs provided the framework for viewing blacks as something less than human. You know, you just cannot treat them like you would human. And this was a part of the history now that has been written down in the books, and you will probably not find it in many of your history books. I don't know how many of the history books you will be able to find in your library, but these books that we have written down, especially this last one on the bottom, talk about a social study. The teacher analyzed the treatment of the Negro in a sample of junior and senior high school as a history textbook. This book will help a teacher who is wanting to teach evaluate the treatment of the Negro in all of this, you know, social or any kind of studies that he is doing. And the next one, I think as you look at those, most of those books will give you some idea of what happened during the second book by Herbert is a document of the Negro people in the United States. And it's a two-volume book, and that one should give you a little bit of the history from the role of from the Civil War to the founding of the NAACP, of what happened there. So you'll have some of those historical documents that I'm speaking about written down there. But now the constructs that caused this kind of thing to happen was the laws, the history, the theology, the anthropology, the justifications, and all of this was then under the heading of racism. And racism is like we say we believe something to be true, and therefore it is true. It is out of that kind of thing that this little organization has peeped its head out of the community and concerns again. Because it is saying in one instance we want to keep as the guy said, we want to keep our community the way they are. And of course, these are sick people, and I guess as long as we have a society, we will have sick people in those societies. Now, some of the goals, if we would look at some of the goals that we would like to accomplish in order to be about doing some things that's going to help. As we've looked at now the black perspective, as we've looked at some of the conditions that we have lived under and probably will live under for a long time in the years to come, we need to look at some goals that we set for ourselves, or some goals that we can look at on a long range or short range time, and see if there is any justification for trying to accomplish any of the goals that we set out to look at tonight. Goal number one is that both black and white community must be changed. I think the time has come when we should no longer have in the United States of America a black and a white community. I think the time has come when we ought to live together as the people that we say we can. Now, there is one little thing I like to say. You know, when the Bible said, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth, and we have replenished it, and then the Bible says to us to have dominion over the fowl of the air, the fish of the sea, and all of that kind of thing. I think the day has come now that we have learned to fly the air better than the birds that God created. We have learned to swim the ocean better than the fish in the oceans and the sea. But we have not learned to live as people on this earth. You know, we can go up and fly at supersonic sounds of speed around the world and not be afraid. We can go to the depth of the ocean in the submarines and not be afraid. But we cannot walk on our streets in the places where we live and be unafraid. Where is the God that created people in the beginning? Was it God that created us, or was it evolution that brought us into the processes of life? You remember the story that James talked about when he said, faith without work is dead. It is not in reading the Bible that make us Christian. It is doing what's in this Bible that make us what God wants us to be. Jesus said, if anyone hear these words of mine and do them not, I will liken him to a foolish man who built his house upon the sand. When the temptations of life come, these are the temptations of life. When the storm began to blow and the rain fall, the house will too. He's talking about our faith in that instance. These are some of the goals that we must look at when I say the black and the white community must change. They must change in the sense where we can be able to walk and not get weary. We'll be able to run and not faint. We'll be able to mount up, as Isaiah said, with wings like eagles. Those that wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. We must change those communities. That's one goal that we must set as we go about to do the things that God has called us to do. In our bicentennial year, this little Bible came out, Good News for Mortal Men, a paraphrase, Let Freedom Ring. And you recall that was the final little sermon that Dr. King preached, Let Freedom Ring. And we are supposed to know it was one that he preached at Washington, Let Freedom Ring. And he said, when we let it ring from the housetop and from the hamlet, from the mountains, from all of those places, then would be the time when we could walk together and hold hands, black men and white men, Protestants and Jews. That's the thing that has to do with looking at a perspective. We have to have some goals, and I think that our goals must be that we change our community from this kind of thinking to the kind of thinking that will be the kind of thinking that will cause us all to walk together, as our little word Senate means, that we walk together in agreement without being afraid. The second one is the entire national purpose would have to be reformed. And what do we mean by the entire national purpose? When we look at our national scene right now, we all talk about the bad things that are going on in Washington. You recall, and I don't want to pick on anyone, but I just have to use a few names. Do you remember anything years ago about that man? Let me jar your memories. You do, okay. Let me jar your memories a little bit. Do you remember a man now dead? A congressman named Adam Clayton Powell. It was this man who said that Adam Clayton Powell was using the public money to take women down in places like Tahiti and all of those little places. And Powell was expelled at one time, and then he got his seat back because the people voted him back in. Now, when Sister Ray told the story about Brother Hayes, you know, most people didn't feel sorry for him. Christ said, those who know and still do will be beaten with many stripes. But the ones that don't know and do will be beaten with fewer or lesser. Those are the words of Jesus. And we're beginning to see a lot of things. Just as plain as when we put on the board, say, the mirror is for us to look at. You're in call sometime during the funeral, we say that each one of us, and one of the Bible verses we use, must account for everything that he has done in his body, whether it be good or evil. That's what we look at when we look at the national purpose. Whether our national purpose is good or evil. One of the things that Dr. King used to say constantly when he was sitting down talking with people, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. We have allowed injustice to rampant in our church, in our country, to the point now where there is almost justice for no one. You know, they tell us that in the next 10 years that we will not have a black or white problem. And you believe you me, I believe it. We will have this problem. That's the problem we will have in 1986. And the question is, will we exterminate all of these people in order to live the way that we want to live? You know, in my congregation, I guess I have about 50 elderly people that are beyond the age of 70. A good number of them have been placed into homes. And some of them have, most of them have sons and daughters and people around. And people believe it when I say that people are shoving old people into the place of forgetfulness. The time used to be when we would take care of a mother or father. But you know that time is fast leaving us. I often talk to the young people in my congregation about that little problem there. And they say, well, you know, we have to live our own lives. And you know, if as you look at that, most of the homes cost anywhere from $1,000 up a month for people to go in. And you could hire someone to come in your home and take care of, help with the people that are in this bracket. Let's remember that that time is going to come for all of us if we live. And as Dr. King said, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. I think we need to start looking at that kind of thing. This, you know, these young folks that we talk about are still kind of young. They can play with that. But there are many Americans now who are really afraid that they aren't going to know exactly what's going to happen to them the next day, the next time, and that kind of thing. And this is history repeating itself. Like coming back, instead of being where it started with Adam Clayton Powell, it's right back here with the person that was saying, let's get rid of this and let's get rid of that and the other. So that's what we mean when we say the national purpose, that we look at people as people and we don't look at them as one young man said, well, the old goat is going to die anyway, which, you know, he's talking about his own father when he said that. And number three, in order to accomplish these, new methods must be found. You know, our congressmen and legislators and our church leaders, they aren't God. So therefore, they don't know everything. We, as the people who have been baptized and redeemed by God to see things in our day, we will have to speak out and speak the truth and say what we feel in order to help people to make the place where we live now and then a comfortable place for us, so that this word will not become this one in the life of people as they see their last days upon this earth. And then the last thing we want to look at, and then we'll try to fully develop what we mean by goals, a method which would fully and finally bring about success. That's what we need, the kind of method that would fully and finally bring about success. A method where all of these people would be able to see the national purpose together. Where you wouldn't have the aged, the middle-aged, the young. We are moving toward that kind of thing. I think if the Warren Commission report was correct, that this, you know, that we're headed for two societies at that time. I think if they were studied today, it would be different. They would say we're headed for two societies. Those are the two societies that we have. The over 30 and the under 30. Now, if I had two young people in here under 30, you would almost identically get the same answer from both of them on these two issues. Now, let's start examining that thing. It's not that we have, it's no longer this in this country. When it comes to what counts, when people have to decide between an aged person and a person under 30, these folks, they will go for the one under 30 every time. Surveys have been studied, and it shows that. What is going to happen in the next years to come? You know, they are saying now that the hospital have it where when a person in the hospital has done all they can do, then the person can decide whether or not he wants to live. When a person is old and their eyesight is not as good, and someone bring you some papers, 6 or 7 pages long, and you can't read, and say, sign this, Who will know what they are signing? That's the kind of thing that we have to look at that word we said. Which one of these would we be dealing with? We got fear, love up there. But that's where we're going to be in the next few years. The over 30s and the under 30s. We should have taken a little clue from the Symbionese Liberation Army people. I would have liked, if there was some way possible, that we could have gotten all of those young folks and studied, placed them in some place of confinement if that was the thing, but actually studied what was the cause behind the problem. And I think we're so busy with so many things. Our national concern is that we want to keep ahead of Russia. I don't think Russia is our number one enemy. I don't think any other country is our worst enemy. We are our own worst enemy, if we have one. Now, the reason I say that is because I am a chaplain in the United States Army Reserve. And I get a chance to see all kinds of young folks. Get a chance to hear the kinds of things that they're seeing. And these are the young men and young women that are defending our country. Do you know these young people think much different than we do? And it will shock some of us to know how they feel. We have to change the national scene. The number one thing, as we have, the goals that we have set up must be changed so that we can accomplish something. We have all looked at one another and say, well, the blacks are the problem. We'll look at it and say, the whites are the problem. But you know, unless and it's in some little place that I have not visited, I have not found it to be that way. You know, someone told us, in 1974, we had one little congregation that was 180 people, all black. And there was another congregation, East St. Louis, had 325 people, all white, in a changing community. And people said it couldn't be done. There's no way that you could merge the two churches, because one is black and one is white. And I say, I don't believe that's the issue. Give us only 6 weeks to work with it. And we took 6 weeks and we worked out a merger between the two. And when it happened, people couldn't believe it. But the issue was not black and white. The issue was what people believed that they could accomplish together. When you get like-minded people together, it's just like turning on the light in the dark. All of that stuff dispels itself. And there's a lot of things that can be worked out, beautiful things, where people can work and cooperate and that kind of thing. I really don't think the issues today, as some are trying to make them, are right here. I think we have come as close to passing that. But I think if we don't hurry, if something isn't done, that issue, like many other issues, will be covered over and we won't be able to see the real cause of this problem that we have when we get there. I think we have three groups of people in this country. Those that are aged now, the middle age, and the young. I think that this consists of 70% of our people. The middle age and the aged. You know, the reason I say that is because when a father and a mother works all of their life and they buy them a home, and pay for it. And say to their young folks, we bought a home. We're going to leave it to you. You can sell it. I don't want it. I don't want to live there. That's the thing you hear in both. See, now America has people who, in both of those communities, black and white, who have done this. And the sons and daughters are saying, we don't want it. And people are saying, what is it now that has caused this? You know, you usually could pass things down from one generation to the other. But that time is fast approaching when young people want to be like the young son or the prodigal son. They want to get out and make their own way in life. They really just don't want to accept the things that has happened to them. I think that when we look at the national scene concerning welfare and public aid and all of the other kinds of things we have, Medicaid, Medicare, that kind of thing, it should be directed here, because these people, if jobs are available, will not accept that kind of thing. We just had a family that left East St. Louis and went to California, and they didn't even take time to sell the little property, although it had gone down, just left it there and up and left. Both in their 70s, almost their 80s, going to an unknown place where they only have a sister, no friends. And see, uprooting people is the same thing that happened here. The uprooting of people. No family. No family ties. They just want to forget all of that. It seems as though the free has become the slave. And the slave become the free. But that's one of the things we look at when we look at our national scene, a method by which we can fully and finally bring about success. Not only in the country, but also in the church. Now, next time, we will start with some of the issues. By issues, I mean some of the things. Tonight, we talked about what is and what was. Next time, we'll talk about what ought to be and why it isn't what it ought to be. And we will have a few minutes now to pause for some questions and discussion, if you have some over the perspective that we looked at tonight. And then we have to cut it off about 9:30.